Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
You're listening to the Fiber Talk midweek version thing that we do on Wednesdays. Yeah, that was smooth.
It's Wednesday.
Whatever. Let's see. We have, for the record, there is no show tonight. September 30, no show tonight, and no show Friday night, just for the record. So we're back with live shows next Wednesday, the 7th. And it's Wednesday, and then on the 11th, we start the meditation hour. So it's Wednesday and Sunday now, all the way through Thanksgiving. So no more Friday night shows. So don't show up tonight. No show tonight. Don't show up looking for one because not there. Boy, that was fun with Gann Rogers. Hey, speaking of Gann Rogers, and we were, that was fun Monday night, but now Gann will be with us next Wednesday, the 7th, when she introduces a new design in her Patriotic series, and you got a little hint of it Monday night in our Monday Heart show when Gann joined us. You got a little hint of it. I think most people are getting to figure it out, but figuring it out and seeing it are, a couple worlds apart there.
Yeah.
So join us on the 7th. Gann will be back live, and we'll get to see that and talk about all the parts that go into her new design. So, yay. But that was fun Monday night. I'll talk to Gann any day, anytime for hours. It's okay.
Yeah, and she's just such a fabulous teacher. She is always trying to teach.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, it teach and it has a real talent for conveying the information.
Yes.
Yeah. Explaining just what's in her head because that's, some artists, and it's understandable, they just do it. It just comes out of their head, they do it, and if you say, well, why this and how this, they don't know. And they don't want to know because it gets in the way of the flow of the art ideas. They don't want to break it down and analyze it. But Gann has that ability to create the art and then explain how it works and why it works. And it's so much fun to talk to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a command of color and thread and dimension. It's just, yeah.
And she uses fairly basic stitches.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, that's just it. You're exactly right. Not complex at all.
No.
Yeah. So it's neat. It's neat. And now what her next sale is the 15th of October, right?
I think.
Yes.
I'm waiting for my newsletter to show up to remind me.
Go to GannRogers.com and she'll have it there. But you want to be in on that because the new introduction that she'll show on the 7th will be part of what you can purchase through the thing. And I think she's going to have she said that she's going to have more of the Patriotica hearts available, the series of four that we're working on. So she's going to have more of those. That's 8 o'clock. East 8 o'clock Pacific time, so 11 o'clock Eastern, and whatever it is for you in the middle. But that's one of those. That's like buying concert tickets. Get on your machine and get ready to go, so you know what you want to buy. And
right, and the other thing I'm going to advise people: if it doesn't come up, if her webpage is like slow and you're there on time, hit refresh on your computer, or I think close off the page and start it up again. Sometimes it won't refresh. But people have had that issue. So that's my advice. I had that problem last time. I was like, oh, she's sold out of everything and I'm just getting on. I hit refresh and there it all was. It was lovely.
Yeah. These days she makes up plenty of kits.
Right.
Yeah, if you're there that day, and if you hang in there, and you'll get it. You wait 2 or 3 days, no, probably all gone. But, yeah, yeah, she's, well, she made up a ton of the Patriotica Hearts kits, a ton of them, and those all sold within a day or so, but, and the waiting list is long, so the more available coming up. Always fun when she has a sale, and she sells kits. You know,
yes,
folks, she,
only kits.
Yeah, don't be beating on her about just a pattern and you use your own threads. Her stuff comes in a kit because she wants you to have what she used to make the design. And if you want to vary from that, she will stand and applaud you every step of the way, but she sells the kits. And, so you buy the kit. And then you take it and stitch it that way or vary from it, but you can always go back to the base. And I know some people just sell me the chart. Now she has had, like the Downton Abbey series, where she sold just the chart. There are instances where she'll sell the chart as a normal thing, but for most of these things, it's a kit and it's all type top flight materials too. She doesn't use second grade anything. It's all and those hearts. It's pretty clear to me just pulling out the threads that there's more than enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Always plenty of threads. I have never ever run out, and I've done quite a few of her hearts.
Yeah, that's a collection to have, isn't it?
Yes, it is. She said she had over 100, and I don't have that many.
So how many of her hearts do you have?
Do I have to confess that?
No, just get like plus or minus 15.
let's see. I've done at least, I'm thinking real quick. I think I've done at least 10, and I probably have 10 to 15 of hers.
Yeah. Okay.
So. They are wonderful to stitch, just wonderful to stitch.
Well, she's one. Now, there are other designers who do hearts,
mm-hmm.
and they're nice, but she does something with that shape. She has such a command of how to maximize the space in that shape that I really enjoy.
Yes, and I tried to do, and it was just a kind of a hand embroidery project where I was using a heart shape because I like the shape of a heart. It's nice that, you know, it's symmetrical. So you think it shouldn't be that difficult. It shouldn't be any more difficult than filling a circle because circles are easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. And I learned something doing that project that it is harder to get that shape looking nice. It's harder than you think.
Because
if you do both the sides the same, it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least when I did it, no, some of Gayan's hearts, there's the same on both sides, but there's a reason for that, and it's not boring. But when I did it, it was just like, this is dull. And so how to fill that shape so it's interesting, it's your eye moves around the design. She's fabulous at it.
Yeah, we were talking there Monday night and looking at some of her designs. It just... It amazes me because it is such an irregular shape in terms of composition of a design that, yeah, I don't know how she sees it, but she clearly sees it.
Right. Well, even like the Lady Liberty, which is a great, well, the San Francisco, the bridge, how that line moves across. And yet she, I don't know. It's just, and it's in the foreground, and the buildings are behind. It's just amazing. That's so. I think it's difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to do it well.
Yeah, yeah, that's the key. Yeah, and to keep a sense of scale, with yeah, just to have a rectangle, and keep things in proportion across the rectangle is one thing. But to have a heart and have that big fat area at the top, and then you got to make it work down at the bottom where it comes to a point and you completely run out of room. How do you make something that visually is a rectangle or a circle? How do you make that fit in that shape and make visual sense? And that's, to me, that's wow. Yeah, if you can pull that off, that's impressive.
Right. It is. It is. Well, they're just, and they're in heart shapes. I mean, you know, as kids, you know, you learn to cut them. You think they'd be relatively easy to do, but they're just not. It's just, I just love it.
Yeah.
How she works that design in.
Yep. No, and I always, on hers, but one of the things I enjoy looking at is how she handles that point down at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has to be the anchor. You know, that's the bottom, so it has to be the anchor, but there's no physical space there to work with. So how do you put an anchor for a design, an image, you know, effectively an image, when you really don't have a lot of space, and give that whole thing a base? And right. To me, that's where the real payoff of the talent is. Because on that, if you look on the Monday night show, we're showing the Lady Liberty, where she did the Liberty statue, and then New York in the background. And she has the statue in the foreground, and the base is at the point. And she has just enough down there to visually suggest the base of the statue, mm-hmm. in a space that just, she doesn't have any space to work with. And it anchors it, and it works. And
right.
Yeah.
Right. And even the ones where, I hate to bring these up because I know she doesn't have any to sell, but the ones where she was doing the Elizabeth piece and the Bess of Hardwick, those are hearts. She had heart shape, so you could practice. It was like your doodle cloth before you did the big piece. So you could practice the black work. You could practice all the different stitches in this little space. And it looks like a bodice to a dress,
mm-hmm.
which was amazing to me. My kids always, I've said this before, always said, so where are the gals' heads, you know? You know, because it does. It looks like the top of a dress. But how did she manage to do that so beautifully in a heart shape?
Yeah.
It's just a gorgeous. The symmetry on both sides, the amount of detail she puts in such a little space, too. I think that's another
yes.
amazing thing.
Yeah, yeah. And folks, you know, just look up Gay Ann Rogers' hearts. You'll see. But that's the other talent she has, because that with her queen designs, when you say so much detail and so little space, I always will gush over the way she handles faces, because right. faces in needlepoint always look chunky. Except when she does them.
Yeah.
And I don't know how she does that. I really don't. And she's doing it with, like, the eyes, she's doing it with just a handful of stitches. And
right.
the eyes are real. And
right. And I know, like, I had bought Elizabeth, and then Catherine came out, I think was the next one. And I thought, oh, you know, she's nice, but. And then I saw someone who had stitched it, who brought it to our guild meeting and was working on it. And that was a mistake. And then the next time she sold it that I could get it, I bought one. Because when you look at it on the computer screen, it doesn't do her work justice. So her new one, you might look at it and think, I don't know. My advice is, if you liked her queens, you will probably want to do this one, because it, when you, I'm sure when we see it in person, someone stitches it and you see it in person, you'll be like, oh, I wish I'd purchased that one if you don't get it. Because it, I think she just does such a lovely job with the faces, with all the detail in the piece. They're fun to stitch. They're just, they hit all my buttons.
Now, how many of the queens have you stitched?
I've only stitched one.
The one, okay. I mean, they're serious projects, right?
they take some time. I think people have done them in a few months, because if you're a single project person, which you know I'm not, you could probably get it done fairly, because it's nothing complicated, but it has a lot of layers. I think, looking at the other pieces in my head, I think Elizabeth might have been the hardest, because she had detached buttonhole on the sleeves.
Uh-huh.
And her ruff. And that's a little hard to do, you know, to get your tension right.
Yeah.
But other than that, that was, I think, the hardest stitch in the whole piece. And putting the beads on. Everyone, when they got to the beads, they kind of had, we all whined and cried about that. She's like, just do it. Just stitch them down. Stop whining.
Well, and her use of beads, you know, that's the other part. Her use of beads, and all I've ever seen is photos. No, I have seen one of her queens live. That's right. And about fell over because it's just incredible. But right. The way she uses beads, she has that knack for not overusing the beads.
No, they do what she wants them to do. So if you look up her, I think they were the jewels. She made, like, for the Russians had fabulous jewelry, and she talks about the history of that at one point in time in her blog or something. But there's not too much. It looks like jewelry on those hearts.
Yeah.
How does she do that? You're stitching along and you're just trying, you're trying to get everything so it hangs like a necklace. And it's just, it's like, oh my, how fabulous.
Yeah.
But she doesn't use too much.
Right.
She's just enough to get that bling in, so you know it's jewelry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the beads have a presence without overwhelming. And that's, in a lot of designs, it's, to me, it's, okay, lighten up on the beads. Or these, you know, this design needs more beads because there aren't enough there to make it look like you really mean it. Right. And she finds that happy medium. And, the jewelry, and the jewelry visually on those queens, the jewelry becomes, in your mind, true jewelry. It's right. Not beads that are supposed to look like jewelry. It works. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yep. She's one of that handful of people that operated at a level that's, yeah. Few attain it. They really do. And then she's just consistently doing it. And this one we're going to see next week. Ah, man, I tell you, when she sent the pictures, like, holy smokes, Gan. Wow.
And then I have questions, you know, about her. The other thing I need, you know, just to ask her about her needle books. She's always making, for her queens, they always have an accompanying needle book.
Uh-huh.
And they're fun to stitch. I've done two of her needle books. But they are, again, if you think, okay, this the queen is not what I want to do. Look at her. If she's selling one of her needle books, they are fun to stitch, and they're not that hard. But they look, people look at them and like, you stitch that? And you're like, yes. And they're fascinating. People who don't do needlework will take it and open it up and be looking at it because they're so well designed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing with her. She's so versatile. As we continue our gay and segment, our gay and gushing segment.
Yes.
But if you look at the queens and you go, I don't want to do one of those, you know, that's just not my cup of tea. Go find her geometric pieces. Right. Because, I have the full series of the Downton Abbey, the three sisters and the mother. And I did, Lady Edith, the redhead, right? Yeah. Beautiful piece, just a gorgeous piece. That's just like a little 7x7-inch square geometric piece. And I have one of her Tudor rose things. You have both of them, right?
Echoes of Elizabeth. Yes.
Yes. And those are gorgeous. And that's so there's so much she does that is not those queens. I mean, they're the crown jewels of her collection, no question about it. But that same design, ability, and style just permeates everything she does. It's gorgeous stuff.
Right. It is.
A treasure. Yes.
Absolutely.
A treasure. All right. That ends the Gay Ann Gushing segment.
Okay. We're done now.
20 minutes of Gay Ann Gushing. That'll be it.
Enough of... All right.
And that was not a paid announcement either. That was
we just like her work.
Just comes right from the heart. Yep. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Oh yes, starting the 11th now. I wanted meditative stitching. Starting the 11th, Sunday the 11th at 2:00 in the PM on YouTube, will be a 7-week series of live hour video shows focused on meditative stitching. And I'm really looking forward to this because this is kind of a thing. And Krista West of Avalia has talked about it more than once. We've had more than one conversation with her about having a chart and not having to stare at the chart all the time. You can just get thread and just stitch and let your mind go. And so that's what we're going to work on Sunday afternoons for 7 weeks, starting on the 11th. And I'm using, and Jennifer are using the basket weave design that Avalia, Krista West at Avalia just introduced. And you have something else going, right?
Right. Well, I'm actually going to work on a different Avalia because there's several of hers that just, and so I think I have the, I have a little bit kit and I haven't decided. And then, but the one that really calls to me is the poppy, the Roman poppy. Mm-hmm. And I have the kit and the kit is very well put together. It has all the threads. It has a needle. All you need is a hoop or something to put it in.
Yeah.
And, so yes, I just,
So that's going to be your meditative piece.
Yes. I've got to decide which one I'm going to do. I'll have to meditate on that for a moment.
Yeah, you just ponder that in your heart. Yes.
I'll ponder it, yes. the big kit would, I think I could get it done before Christmas, though. So, you know, maybe that's what I should do.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm just going to do like just a 10x10 square, which will be probably 7x7 actual design size. Just something that you could sit a vase on or something. Mm-hmm. Not going to make a big project out of it. But the idea is meditative stitching. So join us for that and pick out, you don't have to do an Avalia one, though Krista would appreciate that. But, something that you are not constantly referring to the chart. So you can just let your mind go. And then we're going to work into the hour, some meditation things, some breathing exercises that you can use that will help you as you stitch for hours, and then some basic stretching things that people should do to keep from getting repetitive stress injuries. So all going to be built into the hour, and then we'll have some quiet stitching, some exchanges of conversation, and so on and so forth. But kind of a mixture of things, all focused around meditative stitching, because I think that I'm looking forward to it because I think this kind of thing should play a bigger role in stitching, just in general.
Right. Yes, and I think sometimes we get too stressed out about our stitching, and I think if you can relax when you're doing it, it does bring down your heart rate and it lowers your blood pressure, all those good things, but only if you're just kind of quietly doing it. You know, if you're, you know, too much tension,
right.
Watching something on TV that's stressing you out. You know, it's not going to be meditative, but if you turn off your devices even, and just kind of get quiet and do it, it's very relaxing. I find it, or just have music on or something. I don't know. I think people should try it.
Yeah, people should try it. And I think for some, probably would pay off to set aside every day for a half hour, I'm going to do that, and mm-hmm. and make a habit of it. And because there's, I mean, we all know, we've talked about it 1,000 times, there's a lot of value to needlework in terms of just that. Your heart rate goes down, your mind tension goes away. We've all felt it when we've been stitching. But if you have something like that where you can just sit down and just go, and you're not constantly highlighting a chart and marking things off and counting and all those things, and you can just go, then that's when you can really, really achieve the full benefit. So
right, right. And I think too, learning about the stretching and some of the breathing exercises that we're going to bring in, I think that'll help people. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think we sit too long. So if we can learn to do some stretching and relax some of the tension we get just from sitting and stitching, I think that'll help too.
Yeah.
So I think I'm looking forward to the show. I'm looking forward to it. I think
Well, how many people do you know have heard from where my hands hurt after a while? Well, then a little stretching, a little get up and down. Don't sit for 4 hours. You'll stand up every now and then.
Right.
So that starts on the 11th of October. And so join us for that. Find yourself a meditative stitching thing. If you want to do one of the meditative pieces from Avalia, go to avalia.life, and there's an M in the catalog of designs. She has an M next to the ones that she has designated as meditative designs. And you can buy from her, or Kim at Sassy Jacks has her entire line and can kit you up. And we were going to do it this coming Sunday, but we moved it a week so that people would have a chance to order kits and get them in time to start with us. So try that. And then if you have something else that you know you don't have to look at the chart all the time, because it's repetitive design, then use that. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things out there that you could use. So.
Yeah. Don't feel left out. Just pick something.
Go. Pick something and work on it.
Yes. Join us.
Join the fun.
Join us. Yep. So, and speaking of Avalia, you did her little octopus. What is that called?
Octo Cafe.
Yes, that worked out pretty cool.
I loved him when I first saw him. And then I showed him to my husband thinking he would like, yeah, whatever. He thought it was hilarious. And then I was stitching it while we did a little traveling to see my boys. And they loved it. They thought it was great. I know it's supposed to be kind of a beginner's kit. And I liked it because it had all the materials in it. I had plenty of thread. She gives you a hoop, a very thin wooden hoop, but you could stitch with it. A needle. I think there was a needle in there.
Yep.
And only thing you don't have is scissors. So everything's there. My only problem was I started with the wave, and that wave, to get the points in so it looks nice, I ripped it out 3 times before I felt comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And I ended up using just a single thread, and she said to use 2 strands of floss to make it thicker. I went with 1 because I just couldn't get it to look smooth.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you do a chain stitch around the circle, and I couldn't get my chain stitch to be even. So I just did a whipped chain, which is you do the chain and then you do a kind of a whip stitch around it. Look on Mary Corbett's site. You'll find that stitch.
When in doubt.
But I finished that. I think I finished it within a week of starting it. It went fast. It wasn't hard at all to stitch. And I had plenty of thread left over. My one son who used to stitch said, oh, it'd be really cool, Mom, if you did like a satin stitch and made it look like a wave. And I looked at him and he goes, yeah, maybe not. That might be too much work. So I did think about that, though. I did think about adding that, or taking colored pencils and coloring in the octopus itself. and then have, I would have colored it first and then stitched it.
Uh-huh.
You could, but I thought, I don't have colored pencils with me. I'm getting this done. It's just too stinking cute. It has to be finished. So now I've got to do the final finishing, and you finish it in the hoop that she sends you mm-hmm. with you. And she tells you how to finish in the kit. So yeah, I just need to take a few minutes and get it done.
Yep. Well, it sure worked up great. It was fast and it worked up great. And, you got a little project and it was a good on the road project too. So
yes. Yes. 'Cause everything was in there. And so, lots of fun. And then I kept thinking of ideas because she gives you the pattern, the octopus inside, the drawing inside the kit. And she says, feel free to do this again if you want. And I kept thinking, if I shrunk it down just a little bit, wouldn't that be fun to stitch onto something?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause everyone who saw it thought it was great. Just loved that octopus with his coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, you could stitch that on a shirt pocket or something.
Right, yeah. Right. And it would be fast.
Right, yeah, yeah. It wouldn't be a great big involved thing at all, no. It's yeah.
No. Fabulous design. Fabulous design.
Yep, good one. Yeah. Yep, Octo Cafe. So it's the octopus pouring coffee into, there was some.
Okay. It's a, isn't that a Turkish coffee maker, I think is what that.
Okay.
So if you've ever read about Turkish coffee, you have this long handled coffee maker and you just put the grounds in, I think, and you boil the, it has a whole process.
Yeah.
So.
Doesn't come out of a Diet Pepsi bottle. I lose interest, but whatever.
if you like strong coffee, Turkish coffee would be, that's the kind of stuff you'd like. It's almost like an espresso.
That's what comes to my mind when I hear Turkish coffee is just this side of mud.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay. More power
only
to
had
you.
It once or twice, but my family immediately said, yeah, that's you, Mom.
More power to you, I'll say. Yep. So we were talking about, that last couple of days, we've been talking about Trish Nguyen's Thistle Threads upcoming white work course.
Yes.
And what is it, 17th century, was it?
Yes, 17th. Yeah,
I think that's what it is. I don't have it written down, but I think that's what it is. So that's, you can sign up now. There's like 50 slots left, so plenty of room to start on the first. And if you sign up now, what is it you get? You can get involved in the one that's ongoing now?
Right. So if you pay in full, don't do her, I think she's 18-month payment schedule. If you pay in full, you can join the one that's going on in 2020. If you do the payment schedule, you start January 1st, 2021.
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking about doing that, and I say all that to say this and ask the question, is the role of history, because now, I mean, there's obviously a lot of history in this, and, you know, what role, because I know what it is for me, what role does the history of the needlework play in your interest or enjoyment?
Well, and I was thinking about that because when my husband and I first were married, he had a 3-month assignment first in France, and then like a year or so later, we were 6 months in Italy. And so I was able to travel and see some of the great museums in Europe. And I always looked for needlework mm-hmm. there. And I always loved history. So we always were, my husband's kind of a history buff too. So, you know, anything historical I'm interested in. And so I'm really fascinated by why people made the things they did when they made them. So like, why were they doing these white work samplers at this point in time? Why did they do stump work boxes? And that's a very short period of time. Why were they doing those then? What's the, you know, all the ecclesiastical vestments? They do change over time. If you look at those, that's most of the needlework I would see in Europe. You know, you had the very fabulous, you know, glittery gold work pieces. And then, you know, now it's much more simplified. And so that intrigues me. It makes me really, really curious. And then just the history in general, you know, who was reigning during the time. Elizabeth I, she did needlework while she was, she's kind of imprisoned with her sister Mary, and she was trying to gain favor with Mary. And there's that whole history going on with her and her sister. That intrigues me. What kind of needlework was she doing? I'd like to, you know, you want to see it, you know, the needlework that was done at that time, during the Elizabethan period, those, they were like purses, and then they were handed down to people that had money in them. That's fascinating stuff. I'm just curious about it. How did they make them? Why did they make them? What materials did they use? How did they source their materials?
Right.
I mean, yeah. All of that.
Yeah, see, and that, I think, for me, same kind of thing. It adds, and I've not toured the museums of Europe, but it adds a depth to the project. While you're stitching it, I think you have a greater appreciation for what's going on in your hands, because it's been handed down through, you know, decades. And then when it was done originally, there was some reason for it. It was either to make lace or simulate lace, or, like a vestment had a function, and we're doing it as art, but they did that stuff to tell a story or for a function, and, right. And then to experience that, and it kind of connects you, I think.
Right. Well, and okay, so I don't know if you've looked at Mary Corbett's. She had that online auction link.
Yes.
Okay, so she's got all those stump work pictures are on the auction site, and I always am fascinated by those because they're telling like a biblical story, but the figures are wearing that century's clothing. Which I'm like. Okay, so Japheth and his daughters look like, you know, they're from Charles II court. So what's going on? You know, it's just to me, and that's interesting. So what? I'm curious. You know, why didn't they make it look more like what you'd think a biblical character would wear? Why did they dress them in Charles II clothing? You know that era of clothing. I'm just fascinated by that. And then also, if you look at portraits of when you're looking at art, to see the detail of, like I'm thinking of Holbein, isn't that his name? He did all the Lacy stuff that they painted.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like, oh, okay. Not only did he paint that, but that must have been needlework. And what did that look like in person?
Yeah.
Well, the reverse.
Yeah, the reverse of take the real thing and now make a painting out of it. Yeah.
Right. And then you have all these like historical shows, you know, like Downton Abbey. The clothing. I was watching Victoria, and the clothing that they were wearing, and Victoria talked. Brought back lace making at one point in time. So I was always watching the show for the storyline. That was interesting, but also because I wanted to see their clothing, the things they were making, the handwork they were doing and showing in the show. I was always on the lookout for that.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the history. That's, you know, and that's not that long ago, you know.
Right. But that's just it. It adds that extra dimension to needlework. I mean, even if you go down to something as basic as a reproduction sampler, and you think, all right, so stitching wise, it's just X's. Just count threads and put in an X and move on. But then when you talk to somebody like Barbara Hudson, and she starts unloading the knowledge she has in that head of hers about how these samplers are tied to different families in history, and how stuff that we have here in America got over here from Europe, and the thing takes on a whole new meaning. And right. And to me, that's so now just these simple motifs done with cross stitch carry a whole lot more depth and weight to them than, say, some little cross stitch ornament. Because
or sometimes when you're stitching, like if I'm stitching something, well, I'm gonna say Gayan. Gayan's Elizabeth.
No, that segment's over. No,
I'm sorry. When I was stitching her, I listened to history books on that time period. I borrowed things from my local library. I watched some videos on it. It made stitching the piece, which is modern, it made it much more interesting. Mm-hmm. Because I was learning history about a person at the time. And I feel the same way about the white work. It's like, I think I need to go and find that segment of history and start listening to history books about it mm-hmm. while I stitch. So I'm learning a little bit of the background of what's going on in the world at that time, just to know more.
Yeah, well, and that's
going through people's heads.
Yeah. And that's where like Trisha's class and Natalie Dupuis' class on couching that's going on right now, those courses to me stand out because Natalie and Trisha, they weave that history in there. And, right. But that's a good idea to get a audio book and listen to books about the history while you're doing it. Cause that would add even that much more to it.
Right. And we're interested in history. We're always looking at when we go places, we want to know what happened. Why is this here? Why is this taken place? You know, what went on before we got here? And mm-hmm. we're just always curious about it. And so when I stitch things, I'd like to listen to something that relates to that period if I can. And the libraries are great resources now that they're back open. but there's, because there's lots of stuff out there that you can listen to.
Yeah.
Learn more about that. And then it gives you kind of more insight into the people that are, that did the original work. You know, what was going on in their lives, because I'm just curious about it.
Right.
It makes it much more interesting.
Yeah, because the boxes that Trisha was talking about here a couple of weeks ago.
Caskets,
yes. Couldn't think of the word. But what magnificent pieces of needlework. And then all the little drawers and hidden things. I mean, it's so much more fun inside on top of the needlework. And you think, wow, what a long history they must have. Yet they were, in relative terms, a fairly short run in history. Right. And so they give the perception of something that's been around for, you know, that had a run of 200 years and there's, you know, a collection, but they were a fairly short run. But then what magnificent work.
Right. And the fact, here's the other thing that blew my mind when she was talking about them, that they were really made for like teenage girls.
Right.
You know, and they weren't the best material around. It
right.
wasn't the fanciest stuff around. It was what they had and what they had available, and they just made boxes with, and it just So like the, I don't know, did you watch her little thing about making the glass bottles that go in them?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that was so interesting. So interesting. Yep. And doing one of those stump work caskets is kind of on my, it's been on my bucket list since Mary Corbett, I think, showed them. I think that's the first time I saw them. I think I saw them when I was in Europe. And I always was, you know, you kind of look at them and like, how did they make that stump work? How did they do that? And that's one of the things that's on my bucket list of learning how to do. I've done one stump work piece that I can think of. I took one class and I'm thinking, and I do have Allison Cole's book.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Masterclass. That's the, because it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, this is on my bucket list to learn how to do this.
Yeah. I need to get that book. I need to get that book. Then I'll have two books and I've never done stump work stuff. I have the wires. I have all the pieces.
Do.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I bought a whole bunch of stuff and I just need to actually do it. But that's, you know, that's just it with those caskets. When you see that, you think, oh, that was aristocrat, you know, rich people who could afford these fancy boxes, and you can just imagine made out of mahogany and finished and all blah, 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 blah. And no, not at all. They were these cheap little, you know, cheapest thing you could get. And then somebody took the time to put together the needlework and make a magnificent piece out of it. But they were just for regular folk. And
right. Right. And it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
The history of that.
You know, and then Tricia goes and gets all the, you know, the original threads and researches the threads and how to make them and so on and so forth. But there's that history again, where you learn much more than just how to put some stitches in cloth. And
Right. Yeah. And even Krista West, you know, because she goes and gets historical patterns or, you know, patterns from tiles. So, you know, when you travel other places, well, my husband and I were in Kansas City at the World War I Museum, and it was fascinating to me to see there was some needlework there that they, you know, they made, they were making crazy quilts at that time still.
Mm-hmm.
So they were sewing like patches from the places their soldiers had been and making them into these crazy quilts. But also the building itself had a mixture of like Art Deco and what's the thing after that?
Yeah, whatever you say it is. Whatever you say it is, Beth, that's where I'm going with.
Okay. But when I was looking at things, it was the craftsmanship of the doors, and I could see needlework patterns in that.
Uh-huh.
But there's a history there. There's people who did this fine craftsmanship, these beautiful doors and all that. And then, you know, if you translate that into modern times, you know, could I do a stitched piece from what I saw there? You know, I can't think, it's not Art Deco. Shoot. Oh, well.
It'll come to you when we're done.
When we're done, yeah. So, but it's just, it makes me curious. And then I want to know, okay, so what were people stitching then in the 1914s? They were making quilts. They were doing these crocheted blankets here. But they were also, you know, they were still doing the needle lace things that were popular in Europe. And so they were bringing things back, too, from the Americans were bringing things back, some of the European things. I don't know. I just found it all just, you know, history is interesting. And then the people and what they were making and what they were using for materials.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about needlework is it carries through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can find needlework at all points in history, and in one form or another, and decorative needlework, And yeah, how did people do that? And then how does it come back around and show up again decades later as something else? And
right.
And I just love to know, because you can see through history, like, okay, a big effort to do this kind of needlework, and then it kind of falls off. But then there's those few people who keep it going,
mm-hmm.
and keep it alive. And then all of a sudden it'll bloom again at some other point. And if it wasn't for those few people, and you wonder just how many people did we get down to who are still doing that, keeping that technique alive, and then it burst again. Or did it die out and somebody like Tricia comes along with a microscope and figures out how it right. was done and then revives it? Yvette Stanton is another one. Came along and, this white work, I've seen this white work. I got to figure out where it was done in the world, go find it and figure out how to do it and do a book about it and,
right.
and keep it alive.
And then the people who go back and do that, and I guess that's what I was thinking with Krista, you know, doing a modern interpretation
mm-hmm.
of what they saw, of what they see that's older. And same with Yvette. She, I think it's in her Hardanger book, has a lampshade cover.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. A modern interpretation of this old technique. I just love it.
Yep. Yeah, well, and that's what I so enjoy about Krista West at Avlia, is that same thing, traveling to Greece and the Mediterranean and bringing back those color palettes and those patterns, whether they come from tile or embroidery or whatever, but bringing those back and then we have them. And right. and they stay alive, and because those color palettes she uses are just, they have such a, they're so pleasing to the eye, and mm-hmm. so unusual, at least in my view. I mean, I've just not seen that look, and then those, just the shapes that she comes up with, and that's the fun thing. When I was editing the architectural magazine, we used to do business with an organization called Tile of Spain, and they represented tile artisans from Spain in the U.S. And so it was a way to get all of that specialty tile work, and there's an incredible amount of it done, and make that available for architectural use here in the U.S. through this Tile of Spain group. And I thought more than once, just to have, I should go back and I've lost the contact people now, but to get the catalogs and those styles, the tiles, the patterns, and then convert those to needlework.
Mm-hmm.
Because unique, different, and
right,
yeah,
right, right, and it's different than what we see here.
Right.
In the United States, especially. And it's just fresh colors. And I always look at things. How can I interpret, even though I hardly ever do translate them, I always look at things. How could I translate this into needlework? How could I change this image that I see in my, when I'm out and about, and change it into needlework? And that's where designers fascinate me, because they don't just see and they say, okay, that could be a needlework pattern. They take it and they do it.
They actually deliver something.
Yes.
Instead of just thinking about it and then moving on. Yeah.
Then moving on. Yeah. That's nice. I'm going to move on.
Yep.
But
no, I know what you mean. While we're recording this, we're sharing a house, rented a house with our daughter and son-in-law and our grandsons. And hanging in the living room of this house is, I don't know if it's a painting or what it is, but it's, I don't know, there's 8 or 10 paddles, like canoe paddles.
Oh.
Of course, different wood colors, and all pretty much the same shape, but two or three of them have the ends chewed up, like they've been scraped over rocks or something. And I had that same thought. Wait a minute, this could be a needlework design. And right. So I'm going to take pictures of them. I'm going to take more than one picture. And then they'll stay in my phone, and I'll never do anything. So.
But yeah, so what intrigues you about them? Is it the shape of the paddle?
It's the shape. See, so you take that, and it's, yeah, the shapes are pretty much all the same. But then you say, all right, how can I interpret each of these paddles with a stitch and a color? So it would be mainly browns and tans because it's all wood.
Right.
Some reds, you know, some deep reds and those kinds of things. But how would you interpret so that each paddle makes its own statement, but they all go together?
Right, right.
Because it's just this simple shape. You know, there's nothing at all difficult about any of them. But then how would you interpret that? And could you do that as a counted canvas thing where you would use different stitches? And then, would you have, they're all standing on end. So would you have most of them be some kind of stitch that has a vertical line or vertical visual flow to them, and then throw in one or two that break the pattern? And how would you do that? You know,
right. And then how would you make sure it comes up from your background?
Right.
It doesn't just look like a flat nothingness.
Right. Yeah. And then based on, you know, talking with Gay Ann, and I know that segment's over, but I'm bringing her up again, but talking with her, this past Monday, we're understanding how to make things recede.
Right.
And come forward. So then could I interpret those paddles so that some of them visually are behind others?
Right.
And how would you do that? And which paddle would be the most foreground and why?
Right.
So, yeah. So, because seeing that after talking with Gay Ann, this is a good exercise and I really should see it all the way through. And of course, it's someone else's art. So then to do it for my own personal use is fine, but then if I would, you know, want to make it available to others, then I'd have to go through the whole permission thing. But I think that the exercise is worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And I
wonder if you took it graph paper and graphed some of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because lots of ways, okay, I see that, yep. Mm-hmm.
Because at least it would give you a starting point.
Yeah.
This is easy for me to say. Because I keep on thinking, I mean, I have pictures from when we were in Europe 30-some years ago. And I know I took pictures of tiles.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, this would make a very cool needlework pattern. I actually ran across one not too long ago, and I thought, why didn't I do something with this? Well, time.
Yeah, yeah.
Time. Oh.
But tile is, that's an excellent one.
Right.
Because it's already in a rectangular shape. So, you know, that part's done for you. And so then how would you interpret that pattern, and do you then repeat it? You know, is there a pattern on there that you then repeat, or do you turn it?
Or you just do the whole big thing?
Yeah.
If it's a really big fancy tile, which is I think what this is, it had like little flowers in it, and
yep.
I'm sure it was from when we were in Italy. So it has flowers, then it has like the royal blue in it. And then it has like little tendrils. How would you interpret all that?
Right.
You know, in stitches.
Yeah. And something like that.
Flower would be easy, but then not to make everything on one plane, or do I want everything on one plane?
Mm-hmm.
Do I want it to look like a flat tile? And I'm thinking of, there's a couple of designers that do like tiles that, you know, you can see they took their ideas from a tile. And, you know, how without it getting too busy, where you still have texture. I don't know. That's where I get bogged down.
Yeah, well, and then when you got flowers involved, then does it become a surface embroidery piece?
Right.
Yeah, how do you, what technique do you use, or do you mix techniques? Yeah.
I would probably, knowing me, I'd mix techniques.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so that's the fun, it's the fundamental exercise, but then it's actually sitting down and putting it together. Yeah.
right. And you get to that point and you're like, okay, I'm just going to go stitch someone else's design. Right.
Exactly. They did all the work. Let them.
Lex taxing for my small mite.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, that's where the designer comes in. They actually skip the stitching. I want to design this thing. And
Right.
But yeah, I think that should everyone, can I say that everyone should sit down who's doing serious needlework, everyone should sit down at some point and actually try and design something, just if nothing else, for the appreciation of what goes into it?
Yes, even if they don't get any further than realizing this is harder than it looks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, you know, it goes back to people like changing colors. I think when you first do it, it's like, oh, is this going to really work? Is it going to work? But then you get a little more confidence if you have any color theory at all. But it's harder than you. It isn't just like, yeah, I'm just going to pick whatever I want and plop it down, because it doesn't always work. But
right.
And designing, if you're going to start trying to design something, it doesn't always work, and you've got to be willing to rip it out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And for some people, that's hard. And for me, that was the hardest thing to learn is, okay, I don't like it. I really do have to rip it out. I don't like to rip it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll never like it if it's stitched in and I don't. I just might as well just rip it.
Yeah. Yeah, you wonder for a lot of designers just how often they rip out. You know, what is the pile of thread that gets thrown away before a design actually comes to pass?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I'm pretty sure for Gayanne, it's a big pile of thread.
Right.
Because she talks about ripping out all the time. And so you have to be willing to do that. Yeah, and we want it. We tend to like to put thread in and never have to take it out again. And, yeah, I think the design process requires you to just chew through thread.
Right. Right. And I think Debbie Rowley said something about that at one point in time, too, that, you know, mm-hmm. you've got to be willing to take it out again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. I think it's worth it. I've thought more than once that I don't have an artistic bent at all, but I should sit down, even a simple thing, and these paddles may be it, and at least go through the process and see what comes out the other end. Just to have that experience and if nothing else, a better appreciation for what real talent does.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I'll ponder that. We have things to ponder in our hearts. Yes.
Yes.
Sunday, right. Sunday, Karen Kluba, Rosewood Manor, did first time with her, done a couple videos at Nashville, but first time with her was 2.5 years ago. And that was learning about who she is and what she does and how she does it and so on and so forth. This time we talked a whole lot more about the design process and what goes on in her head and how she creates these things and the tremendous catalog of stuff that she has. And how she will go from technique, or not technique, but design type to design type, because, you know, some days she's doing samplers and other days she's doing something completely different. And the process it takes for her to, from the idea till it shows up and you can buy it. And she's, I was trying to think, and this is going to make somebody mad, but, you know, whatever. I was trying to think, if you look at all the cross-stitch designers, all the top-flight cross-stitch designers, and you look at their catalog of work, I'd have to say Karen Kluba's top five, top three. For me, one of the best in the business, certainly.
She has such a wide variety. And I keep on thinking about her, I think it's 100 alphabets pattern.
Yes, yes.
I just...
It's amazing.
There's something about the, something about the shapes of letters that I like. I like it in stamped pieces. I like it in graphic. There's something about that. So that piece just keeps drawing me back in. I mean, stitching it would be a bear, but
yeah,
it's how she has all those, the graphics in there. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And yeah, then she has the piece that has like, I want to say something with like a wrought iron in it. I'm not.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep.
And so it's totally different.
Yep.
Totally different. And her use of color is amazing.
Yep. And not, and she's not in a color rut at all.
No.
She is it, all kinds of colors. I mean, if you look at her catalog, you can't see, at least I can't see where, oh, she always uses this pretty much this palette, because she doesn't.
No, no.
Yeah.
And her use, like, I'm thinking of her, I think they're Quakers. There's four seasons. How she uses the, starts with B.
Baldani
threads. How she gets the colors the way she wants them just fascinates me.
Yep. Yeah, I do. I was just trying to come up with, is she the best that we have when it comes to pure cross stitch? Is she the best that we have? And I think I could comfortably hold her up and say, yeah, she's the best designer we have. And you could come along with someone else and we could probably talk about it for 20 years and right. Never decide. But yeah, she's, when it comes to cross stitch design, she's definitely up there. So,
right. And she is.
Yeah. And always enjoy talking to her. What a wonderful lady. So that's Sunday.
Excellent.
Yay. All right. That's enough.
All right.
I think so. That's enough. So, right. Live Wednesday night, the 7th, with Gayanne Rogers for more gushing.
Come with questions. She's ready to answer your questions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She'll answer questions all day long. So fire them at her. Yep. Yep. So that's 8 o'clock Eastern on the YouTube channel. New introduction. And she is there to answer questions. So, yep, you're exactly right. Okay, Beth, thanks.